Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Adoption Focus. My name is Jennifer Jaworski, and I'm with Adoption Associates of Michigan. This is Adoption Associates' premier talk radio blog show. Adoption Associates and its staff are trusted leaders in adoption, and we have placed over 5,200 children into loving homes. Since 1990, we have advocated, supported, and nurtured both birth families and adoptive families, and helping families grow through the adoption process is important to us. Our offices are located in Jenison, Lansing, Farmington Hills, and Saginaw, and our private adoption services are available throughout all of Michigan. One of Adoption Associates' commitments is to this weekly radio show, so thank you so much for listening in today. We do hope that you find this forum to be inspirational, educational, and thought-provoking. I am excited today to be talking about a topic that we have not covered yet on Adoption Focus, and we are discussing what it means to adopt transracially from a couple of different perspectives. And our guest today is Heidi Cole. Heidi, I believe you're on the line with us now.
Yes, I am.
Welcome. Thank you for taking time to be on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about the considerations that families do and should make in contemplating transracial adoption. And this is obviously from your perspective as an adoption professional. Heidi, you've been working in the field of adoption for how long now?
Since 2004.
Okay.
So
and obviously... Yeah, you've helped a lot of families grow through adoption, and you kind of are a bit of an expert internally here at Adoption Associates when it comes to transracial adoption. So we're looking forward to today, and I was hoping you could just get us started by talking a little bit about what motivates couples to consider transracial adoption.
Sure, yeah, and I should also add that I am an adoptive parent, and my kids were adopted transracially. So my husband and I are white.
Right.
Our kids are black and mixed race. So not only do I have kind of the professional side of it, but I have the personal side. So I'm really kind of living it every day, too. So
awesome.
I'll just
thank you for sharing that. Yeah, great.
Yeah. Because that might that influences some of my responses. So
okay.
So things that would motivate a couple to consider transracial adoption, there are so many factors. I mean, I think one is that transracial adoption just becomes, it's more and more prevalent and more visible. And so I think for some people who might not have considered it before, they may look around and see others who have done it and said, oh, maybe I can do this too. Maybe this would work for me. And I hear stories of people who've been encouraged by friends or acquaintances or coworkers, you know, who've done this and seeing that it's worked for that family, so it might be a good option for them. So I think sometimes those can be motivators in the beginning. But what we really hope is that the adoptive couple gets to a deeper place and really thinks about why they want to adopt transracially. Some reasons might be maybe they desire to provide a home for a child and they know that there's a need for families to adopt children of color. Hopefully the family has a strong interest and a strong appreciation for other cultures and that they feel that they can confidently raise a child of another race to have a strong racial identity. There might be some people who already have a multiracial family and they want to add to it. That might be a reason people might consider. So usually there are a lot of factors that come into play, but what we really look at is we want to look at the difference between a parent-centered motivation and a child-centered motivation. So it is certainly okay if some of the motivations or reasons that the parents want to adopt transracially are focused on the parents' need. I mean, what they're going to get out of it, that's common and a natural part of any time someone becomes a parent. But also, we want to make sure that they're entering this process with a lot of thought about what the child might need. And so they have a lot of child-focused motivations or child-centered motivations and a desire to meet those needs as well.
Okay, that's great information. So what factors would you say are important for families to consider when deciding whether or not to pursue the adoption of a child of a different race than their own?
I think the first thing that a family should do when considering transracial adoption is just to really take a good long look at their current life and lifestyle and ask themselves some questions. I would ask, what is the racial makeup of my immediate family, of my extended family? What does my friend group look like? What is the racial makeup of my neighborhood and the schools that the child would attend? This is huge because we're asking a child to enter this world of the adoptive family, and so we need to make sure that this is a place that a child will be comfortable and where a child can thrive. And so what we know is that having a child be the only, as in the only child of color, in most aspects of their lives, it's not a healthy thing for them. So I think that the biggest factor should be, what kind of environment will I be bringing a child into? And then for people who are already in an area where the child will interact with others who look like them, you know, that's a great starting place. For people, if they kind of look at their life and realize that it's pretty homogenous, that a child of color, you know, will not have a lot of opportunities to be surrounded by others that look like them, I would probably take a step back and really think about, you know, what is the plan that I'm going to be able to provide that for my child? How can I create that? And I would say another thing to think about, too, is the personalities of the parents. So when you become a multiracial family, you become what we can call a conspicuous family. You stand out. And so naturally, you're going to get looks from others and questions from others when you're out and about. And if you're a really shy person or a person who hates attention or answering questions, you know, it might be harder for you. And that is not to say that you can't do it. But you do need to think about that and figure out, is this the best fit for me, and then I'm going to be prepared for it. I think another personality thing to consider is that it helps if you are a person who's open-minded and flexible. Transracial adoption, I don't think it works quite as well for people who have a hard time with new ideas, or if they have a hard time making changes, or they tend to be a little bit more rigid in their thinking. And again, this is something a person can work on, but it's always good to go into it knowing some of these areas you might need to work on in yourself and an area that might be a challenge for you.
Mm-hmm. Those are great points. And I think that, you know, I like what you said, that just because you may not fit this exact mold right now, it doesn't mean that this isn't appropriate for you. These are areas that you're suggesting that people explore within themselves and consider. And that's, you know, really the message of today, or the considerations. Heidi, could you share a few misconceptions that are common that someone may have regarding transracial adoption?
Sure. I think a big misconception is not recognizing how deep the dynamics are that come with transracial adoption, and that they are lifelong for the child. You know, not really and truly understanding what it means to bring a child of color into their family and what that will mean for the child long term as the child grows. I think most people can imagine, you know, a sweet, cuddly little baby and a toddler. But sometimes when you're thinking, you don't think about teenagers and what dating will be like and, you know, what an adult would be like. And so sometimes people go into transracial adoption thinking love is enough. Love is all we'll need, and the child will be perfectly fine. And this is what some people call the rainbows and unicorns version of adoption, you know, meaning that adoptive parents are only focusing on the really, really positive, happy side, which that is certainly there in adoption, absolutely, but that isn't the whole story. So really, we want parents to just dig really deep and see what it really truly is going to be like to parent a child of color. And I thought of another misconception too, or I don't know if this is a misconception or just a fear, but I do often hear from white adoptive parents that they will encounter negative responses from people of color when they're out and about with their child. And, well, certainly that can happen, but I do think for the most part that there's a lot of support out there for families who are doing this. And I hear stories a lot about other families of color sort of taking the adoptive family under their wing and maybe helping them with hair and giving them guidance and encouragement. So I think sometimes there's a fear sort of at the beginning of the process, but then once a family's into it and have had some experiences and maybe purposely put themselves in some places where they can get some support, they do find that it's actually really a positive thing.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think that maybe that's part of the equation, as you were talking about a little bit earlier, knowing your area and knowing where you live and who your support people are and what your community is like kind of feeds into that too. So along the same line of thought, Heidi, how can or should a couple best prepare themselves for a transracial adoption? If they've considered these factors and say, you know, I think that we can do this, I think we want to do this, how can they prepare themselves for it?
Well, I think that, and I think a good view to sort of take is that you're going to take some strategic, you're going to make some strategic choices about where you live and, you know, who you're going to surround yourself with. And remembering too that even if you live, like for example, in a diverse city, you still might be in a mostly white neighborhood, or you still might socialize in groups that are mostly white. And so that's where you sort of have to take a step even further and say, you know, we want to make sure that our child is going to be interacting with people who look like him or her, and we want to make sure that we are developing relationships with people of color. So I say, you know, make some bold choices and step out there and put yourself out there. And I mean, just a few examples would be identifying a daycare. You know, if you know your child's going to go into a daycare, making sure the daycare has diverse caregivers and diverse kids. Thinking about that school, there are definitely some people who, even if they maybe don't live in an area that they are as happy about with the racial dynamics, but they might choose a school that maybe wouldn't have been their automatic school, but they choose that school because they know it's a better fit for their child, even if it's maybe a little further away. Another thing you can do is research pediatricians and choose a pediatrician who looks like their child, who shares that racial background. Same thing like with a dentist, you know, just think of the people you're going to come into contact with, and how can you choose to put yourself in a position that really sets you up naturally for success. And sometimes people ask us, well, what are you saying? We have to go out and just, you know, force these relationships and make friendships happen, you know, unnaturally. And that is not what we want people to do. What we want is people to put some thought into it and then place themselves in situations and environments where those relationships can naturally form. Another one I didn't mention is church. You know, the church environment is such an important one for so many of our families. And so taking a look and saying, is this the best church environment for me, is another one to think about.
Absolutely.
So another idea I had too is just the idea of preparing yourself by becoming a student. And by that, I mean doing lots and lots of reading, whether it's books, whether it's blogs, whether it's articles, and reading about the history and the culture and, you know, what is important to the people of the child's racial background. And ideally, these are going to be written by a person of color, a person that shares your child's racial background. So I think getting an understanding of the history is really important and a really good thing people can do to prepare themselves. And I'll just give an example for myself. I live in the Metro Detroit area, where the history of what happened in Detroit with the race riots and white flight and housing discrimination, that really shaped the area, and that continues to have ramifications today. So I didn't grow up in the state. When I came here and when I became interested in transracial adoption and racial issues, I learned about this. So I have some deeper understanding of the dynamics that come into play even today. So, but jumping off that, not only focusing on the history, but learning about current events and trends from the perspective of a person of color. And so just a couple examples about that. Current issues would be like maybe learning a little bit more about the Black Lives Matter movement if you don't know about it, and kind of what the thinking process behind that is and what that means, or, you know, taking time to delve into, you know, what's really underneath. For example, people who are, you know, protesting the national anthem or something like that. So I'm not saying you need to necessarily have a certain point of view or that one is right or wrong, but just to know what points of view are out there and understanding it from a different lens, looking at it from a different lens. And so, you know, of course, reading books on transracial adoption are good. They're necessary. They're great. But any writing on a variety of topics from people of color is something that will be a huge help. So I always suggest having an open mind, having some humility, and being ready to learn.
That's excellent information, Heidi. I mean, really excellent things that couples, you know, can and should consider when contemplating transracial adoption. And I want to shift a little bit, and you touched on this a little bit, but I want to kind of talk about it some more about from the child's perspective here. What are the needs of a child of color who has been or is being adopted into a primarily Caucasian family?
Yes, I think the overarching need for a child of color adopted into a white family is to find a way to develop a strong racial identity that will serve them throughout life. And ideally, this will happen in a lot of different ways. And I know I sound like a broken record, but children need to be around people who look like them. You know, it's really not an optional thing. You know, they need this as much as possible in their neighborhood, school, church, friend groups. So if we want the child to develop, you know, this strong racial identity and knowing who they are in childhood, that's, of course, when the parents need to set the stage to make that happen. And so that could mean making some changes. And, you know, just as a side note, one of the things that I've learned from my reading is that a lot of adults who were adopted transracially, if they weren't given this as children, if this need wasn't met, they will eventually go find it on their own. They explore this in college and, you know, they really kind of come into some different revelations as they're adults maybe. So that's a good thing that ideally they can start this in childhood, that they don't have to search for it as they're adults and leaving the home. So another huge need would be for the parents to just do everything they can to understand the perspective of a person of color. And so this is something, it does not come naturally with white people because we've always been the majority group. You know, we've always been in power. And so this is something that a person needs to seek out. You need to purposely try to learn about this. And so one part of understanding that perspective is recognizing that racism exists. And that it exists in many forms, that it can be on an individual level, that it can be on an institutional level. Often today it's worked into the system and it's really subtle. Another part of that would be understanding what white privilege is and how adoptive parents benefit from that. Another need for a child would be to have mentors, who are adults or if they're teenagers maybe who can kind of guide the child along as they grow. Who can teach them strategies for managing some of those racial dynamics that they're going to run into. And again, you know, that's not something that's going to come naturally for white parents. You know, we didn't need to be taught strategies. Speaking for myself, I didn't need to be taught strategies for dealing with racism because that wasn't something that wasn't part of my life. And so you have to reach out and you learn then that this actually happens naturally in families of color. It's embedded into their lives from the start that they start teaching their kids from a young age. And so it might be unfamiliar for white parents. And so that's why we have to seek it out. We have to make sure that our child gets that just to really set them up for success when they leave our home.
And I know that, you know, we started talking about the needs of a child of color in a white home. And we talked a lot, not only about what they need, but the parents' responsibility in setting that stage and making those things come to fruition. So are there any additional ongoing responsibilities that parents are knowingly taking on when they choose to adopt a child of a different race than their own?
Yeah, I thought of two kind of big ones. And the first one would be the responsibility of making sure that the child's hair and skin are cared for well. And so, of course, first there needs to be the understanding and the recognizing that this is important and why it is important. And, you know, like everything, there's a history behind it. So it's really good to understand kind of what's underneath it. But then just making sure that your child's skin is, you know, well moisturized and healthy and that their hair is well cared for and that it's styled appropriately and it's in current styles, you know, that a lot of other children are wearing. And it's really likely that the child is going to have different needs than the parent is used to for themselves. And so there's a learning curve there, which is perfectly fine. We don't expect people to come into this process knowing everything and knowing how to braid hair and that kind of thing. But it is a responsibility that you're taking on. And so that might mean you're learning some skills that you didn't have before, or it might mean that you're seeking someone out to help you or to do it for you. So that's the first thing that responsibility I thought of. And then the second one is it's that responsibility of being the child advocate. And I think that this comes really naturally to parents in a lot of ways because their love for their child is so strong. They want the absolute best for their child. They will move mountains, you know, for that child. So it's really good that parents, most parents are starting off there anyway. But in transracial adoption, it might mean being an advocate about things that they wouldn't have necessarily encountered if they didn't have a child of color. And so just a few examples, like it starts really young when the children are babies and toddlers and you're out in public and people are making comments and asking questions or, you know, wanting to touch the child's hair, that kind of thing. You know, how you respond to that and the messages that you're sending to your child and to society, those are huge choices. And you can choose to build up your child and their identity and protect them from inappropriate things. And so it starts when they're so young. But then it moves into, you know, when they're school age. And you can advocate for your child simply by listening to them and believing them if they come home and they say that they had a racially based incident and then addressing that in whatever way it needs to be addressed with the teachers or principals or whoever. That's a huge way that parents can advocate for their child. I think it also looks like being aware of the content that the child is learning in school, making sure that it isn't just showing stereotypes or caricatures, and advocating to be sure that the school isn't just teaching from a Eurocentric view, but also comes from other perspectives and really values the contributions of people of color. So, and here's another really specific way I have heard of parents advocating for their children is specifically making a request for what teacher their child has. I've had known some people who have known that there are a few Black teachers in the school and really wanting to make sure that their Black child had that Black teacher and making that request. That to me, that's advocating. That's, you know, trying to help your child get off to the best start possible. And that's usually pretty well received.
Right. And I think that this really is tying back into what you were talking about earlier in the podcast about the personality style of the adoptive parent, being comfortable enough to do that, being able to put yourself in this place where you need to go to school and request or ask or advocate or hear your child coming home and saying different things. So this is all tying together in a way that's making a lot of sense for me, Heidi, and hopefully for our listeners too. We are kind of drawing near the end of the podcast, approaching the end of the show, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of respond to what we might be hearing from some people who are listening, thinking, you know, this sounds overwhelming. It sounds like a lot. You know, you have given a lot of great information, but for those that are listening, if this feels like really big to them, how would you respond to that? What is your message to our listeners who have some interest in exploring this, but are also feeling a little bit scared about it?
You know, I would say that yes, it might sound overwhelming, but I really believe that if you have the motivation and the desire to do it, and you can be successful. I think that anybody who has an open mind and a willingness to learn can do it. And, you know, going back talking about personalities, you just reminded me of a family, a woman who came in and she told me, she said, I'm really shy. And she has adopted transracially and done an amazing job with raising her child. And I think of my husband too, who my husband despises conflict. He does not like conflict. But man, there is nothing that is going to get in the way of him protecting his girls. So I think that you certainly, once you become a parent, you can overcome some of those things. But I would also say that the joys and just the really amazing things that come from being a multiracial family, they overshadow any challenges. And I don't actually view anything that we've talked about today as a burden in any way. It might be a challenge, it might be a learning opportunity, but not a burden. And I hear all the time from adoptive parents who say that their life was enhanced in so many ways from being a multiracial family that they never could have predicted or expected. And what's really cool too is that this often spreads. It often spreads to extended family and to friends, and there's sort of a ripple effect. And this was definitely the case in my family, where my husband and I started learning things and applying them in our lives, and then we would pass that information on to our family members. We would teach them and our friends, and over time, we all became different people with a broader perspective than we would have had before. So it can open your eyes to so many new things and experiences that you wouldn't have had if you hadn't taken the leap to do it. So I would encourage people who want to do it, don't let any challenges or any fears stop you from doing it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Heidi.
No problem. I'm happy to do it.
And for those of you that are listening and maybe you're interested in having a one-on-one conversation with Heidi or another caseworker in our agency about what it means to adopt transracially or what that looks like through Adoption Associates, we would encourage you to give us a call at 800-677-2367. Adoption Focus podcast is live on Tuesdays at 11, and we appreciate our listenership and hope that you do continue to be in support of this program. Another great big thanks to Heidi for today. This is excellent information. It will be available through blogtalkradio.com/adoptionfocus for playback permanently on the on-demand website, so please check that out. You can also connect with Adoption Associates on our website at adoptionassociates.net or through Facebook. Heidi, thank you very much. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me.
For now, this is Jennifer on Adoption Focus. We do hope that you continue to listen, learn, and grow in adoption with Adoption Associates Radio. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.